I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars. And this week, I bought a car.
I'm wearing a Levi's sheepskin lined jacket, the sort of jacket you can imagine Bruce Springsteen wearing walking along the side of a road thumbing a lift in the early 80s. You know the jacket, don't you? But he's in a cold state. Yes. He's in a very cold state. Yes. New Jersey, yeah. Michigan, that kind of thing. Bad weather.
I watched that Jeep advert that Springsteen did for the Super Bowl a couple of weeks ago, whatever it was. And have you seen it?
Mm-mm.
It's been withdrawn now because then he got a drink driving conviction. Well, it all seems a bit dodgy, actually.
What? Bruce Springsteen got done for
heard about any of this?
No.
Well,
where have I been?
So,
well, at home, obviously.
I don't know. I wonder sometimes. But I saw the ad, and then it went out during the Super Bowl, and then the following week, which was whenever that was, week before last, Jeep pulled it because, Springsteen, it was revealed that Springsteen had just a couple of weeks before that, I think, had DWI, driving while intoxicated, charge against him. But it turns out he'd been out, seen the story as he was out with his family. He stopped, some fans saw him, came over, and were like, "Hey, how you doing? Hey," and they gave him a shot of vodka or tequila, I think.
And, what, like while he was sitting in his car?
Well, possibly, or he was talking to them, and he had,
or they tailgating.
Had a shot. He was, he was under the drink drive limit, but the cops still booked him.
Interesting.
It seems like the police don't like Bruce Springsteen very much because he's done a song about police brutality or something a few years ago. So the cops are sometimes a little agin him. Plus, he's sort of pretty, I think he's a pretty vocal opponent of recent administration in the US. And,
oh my gosh, I've completely missed this. I've been getting is pictures of that guy waiting for the inauguration wearing mittens and a mask on and appearing
Bernie
in
Sanders.
Every, Larry Sanders. Bernie
Larry
sorry.
Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, Colonel, sorry.
Colonel Sanders.
It's Colonel Abrams. And,
that's why he's
was...
got the big gloves on to stop himself licking his fingers, because you can't do that during COVID, can you? It's not good.
Finger licking bad, exactly. So
finger licking semicolon bad. That's
sort of
was
about
it
the
not?
KFC
I
grammar.
I read this story years ago that when KFC moved into China, someone literally translated their slogan, but because of some translation snafu in turning English into Cantonese, it was translated as Kentucky Fried Chicken, eat your fingers off. I don't know if that's true. I never bothered to check it, but I was told that there was a terrible mix-up.
I can imagine that being a slogan. Being true.
Yeah, I'd like to think it's true. So let's just say that it is. I mean, that's how it works these days, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Something, just say it loudly enough, and it's true.
Quite.
So
I'm thinking Bruce Springsteen. Even if he got done for drink driving as such. All the Jeep adverts I ever see are where the car is pretty much driving as the crow would fly. So surely Springsteen's probably got a few hundred acres kicking about, or he's got a friend. Could he not? You could do a sort of I've had a few too many Miller genuine drafts. I'm just going to drive in a straight line across my own land. I'm not on a road, so it's okay. But look how capable the Jeep is. I've just gone down a really big ditch, out the other side, through a hedge, over a ploughed field. I didn't even know I was in a ploughed field. It's absolutely amazing how capable this Jeep is. I'm going to put it on cruise control, climb into the back seat while it's doing a really big circle in a huge field that's, I don't know, 4 hectares, let's say. And then, so you could still legit do a Jeep advert. You just have to put in lots of writing underneath, like at the end of every American advert. This isn't recommended.
That,
you shouldn't do it. It might cause you heart problems. Your penis would definitely get smaller.
Yeah. Value of the car may go down as well as up. Closed. They always say closed course, don't they? Closed course. Professional stunt driver kills cars. Do not attempt. Do not attempt any of this.
Bruce Springsteen.
Don't even look at this. Look away. Look away at the whole thing.
Bruce Springsteen, close course, alcoholic. Here we go in the new Jeep.
Do not attempt to be Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, I think...
Do not copy the boss in any way at all. If the advert, which I guess...
Boozy Boss still out there edition.
On the internet, the Boozy Boss. It's him driving an old Jeep. An old...
not a Willys Jeep.
Like a 70s one. Would it be a CJ?
Yes, it would. You're absolutely right.
Driving one of those. And it's obviously in a very cold place in the US. I don't know, maybe it's New Jersey where...
Bruce doesn't do hot climate from. America.
He's not good in the hot.
No.
And he's but it's, of course, it's got no sides or roof or anything. And he is wearing some gloves. And all I could find myself thinking as I was watching this ad is, I hope those are fur-lined gloves, because that is going to be parky as you like driving an open-sided roofless Jeep.
You'd need or a double glove.
Snowbelt winter.
Yeah.
Oh, a double glove. Yeah.
Yeah. You know the small slight glove, then going into the big mitten. That's the way I would go if I was driving a completely open, like, let's say, Aerial Atom in wind chill -20. I would tend to go for a double glove scenario, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Just me.
I would as well if I could. I think I've got quite bad circulation. I get very cold hands.
My hands aren't so bad. It's my feet. I've probably talked about this before. I can wear ski socks in summer and my feet don't even sweat. It's amazing. But
the boss, Bruce the Boss Springsteen. Do you know something else, just thinking about American phraseology around car adverts and things, there's one that always amuses me for no real reason that I can explain, which is when they advertise cars in the US, they'll always say something like, you know, there's that sort of fixation with model years, isn't there?
Yeah.
To start, you know, I mean, where are we? So we're in February 2021. I'm sure they're sort of about
2023 models on sale right now.
23 model year. Chrysler 300C. And then they'll say, with available blind spot monitor. And I always get, with available? What a strange phraseology that is. With available moonroof.
Oh, the moonroof. I do like the moonroof. Is the moonroof
fixed? Why do they say moonroof? We say sunroof.
Well, I can't remember if this, and I might get this wrong, I thought moonroof doesn't open. You just look at
it. Oh, it's a glass. It's a glass. Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure, Rich.
Okay.
And as soon as I said it, I felt like I might not be telling truths. The listeners will tell me.
Yeah, we do, people. I have messages in my file of things I always forget to read out from Americans. We do have American listeners. Hello, American listeners. Thank you for both listening and being American. But
yeah, hi, American listeners.
Maybe they can tell us then. I thought moonroof was sunroof. It's just maybe because you don't necessarily want a sunroof if you live in, I don't know, Arizona or somewhere, because you'll bake. But if they bill it as a moonroof, you can go, oh, at night, that'd be nice. I'll put the blind back and look at the moon.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. But I don't know if that's the case. Or is it just sheer size? Is a moonroof a bigger roof than a sunroof?
Oh.
Is it for more stargazing?
But the moon is smaller than the sun. Oh, stargazing, yeah.
But is it more of a stargaze situation, so it's a full pano? Is it like a pano roof before we called them panoramic glass roof? Because moonroof does sound better.
But I remember being a kid and poring over car brochures, and I'm sure it was Toyota always used to refer to sunroofs as moonroofs in the 80s in the UK brochures.
Did they?
I'm pretty sure they did, yeah, and I don't know why. Hey, look, here's an article on Motor Trend, the respected American publication, that says moonroof versus sunroof. What's the difference between them? Let's click on this, and then we'll find out. And it says, oh, it's quite long. In the beginning, cars and over, blah, 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 get to it. Today, oh, my Jesus. In common parlance today, yes, moonroof and sunroof are the same thing. Semantic historians will regale you with stories of how a sunroof was traditionally an opaque panel of metal or canvas. And Ford marketing whiz John Atkinson coined the name moonroof to refer to the optional roof conversion introduced on the 73 Lincoln Mark IV, which replaced the metal panel with a silver-tinted tempered glass one and a sliding interior sunshade to block the light.
Okay.
The Florida ad copy read, when open, you see the moon and it sees you, but when closed, only you have the view. Right,
I think
okay.
I prefer moonroof.
So moonroof means glass sunroof. Yeah, moonroof is something quite romantic about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember my Audi Coupe GT 1983 had one of those steel sunroofs, which, or maybe moonroof, who bloody knows, that you lift out and put in a tray in the boot.
Oh.
It was great.
A steel one?
I think it was steel. I'm pretty sure it was steel. And it would, you had two release catches, so you could lift it up. You could tilt it up for ventilation. Mm. Or you could undo it and slide it into a special felt-lined shelf in the boot. It was so nice, and it never leaked. It was bloody brilliant, and I'm quite down with that. And of course, there's no electrics because it didn't. Nothing went wrong on it. It was just simple catches and jobs are good. And that was blimmin' brilliant. Damn, I missed that car. Damn.
With available moonroof. Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to say that it's just something that always amuses me when they go the 2025 Dodge something or other.
I'm going to order a 2026 car in a few weeks' time.
Well, you'll be able to do that. Give it till March, and the 26s will be on the lot. I know there's a sort of historical basis for it because, you know, American car manufacturers used to sort of quite radically facelift their cars every year or retrim them in some way to, you know, that kind of planned obsolescence thing that John DeLorean was trying to rail against at one point. And so the model year thing sort of is more sort of ingrained in American car culture.
Yeah,
but
it is.
The extent to which it's ingrained is, it was brought home to me once. I was in the US and I borrowed a Mustang, and this was probably about 10 years ago, thereabouts. And I stopped outside a convenience store, and there was a homeless guy slumped on the floor outside the door. And as I got out of the Mustang and walked towards the door, he went, "Hey, buddy!" And I was like, "Oh, hello." I was thinking, "Oh, God, I haven't got any money on me." And then he went, "Is that a 2012? And I was like, "What the fuck?
Seriously?
Is that what's on your mind? What model year a Mustang is?" Yeah.
I mean, I
it's really, really old.
I quite like it when you're talking about older cars, but I'm a bit bored of it now, referring to it model years.
There's a friend of mine in the States who's encyclopedic about model years of certain cars, and but it's so arcane, you know, you have to know so much. I feel like, well, we're helped because we've got registration letters, haven't we? So we can kind of go, oh, it's an R-Reg, so it's a 77 or whatever. But
yeah,
and it's and a 77 looks the same as a 76 and a 78, pretty much in most cars. Unless there was the big facelift came along. But yeah, my
make it sound like a storm.
Aaron in the US,
he's big, like, facelift.
Yeah, a big face. Oh, it's coming. But yeah, my mate Aaron in the US, he sort of go, "Oh, what's that?" And he'll go, "Oh, that's a Dodge Polaris. That's a 66 because you see, the front indicators have been moved down into the fenders, and actually the 65. And and it's like his brain has to be so much more sort of stocked with facts to know all this stuff because they change the cars so much every year.
I quite like that. I know quite a lot about American cars of a certain type, each year derivative, the Chevy Impala being one, probably the Charger as well, but that's only because I researched them to the ends of the earth before I bought one.
Yeah,
and there are the Americans have always been the kings of sort of keeping the underpinnings pretty much the same and just cladding it differently, and then therefore it's a totally different car.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. So
one of the great ones of that, because it's that sort of, they used to really get the most out of the underparts, didn't they? The chassis and the engine on an American car from the 50s through to certainly the 70s.
Yeah.
Probably the same throughout many different iterations of body shell on top.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And one of my favourites was the Lincoln Continental Mark series, the big coupes, the full-size coupes.
What, the sort of middle-aged man spec?
They're full sort of Florida retiree kind of cars.
Yes, yeah.
But you look at some of the later ones, and they have comically massive overhangs. And the reason was because Ford realised that GM had refreshed their cars a bit more comprehensively and made them bigger. And, you know, it's like they were still in an era where size equaled better.
Mm.
And Ford didn't want to spend the money stretching the chassis So they just added extra length with by building out the overhangs. And if you look at the under the bonnet of some of those Lincolns, there is a frigging massive gap between the front of the engine block and the actual front of the car, because it's just all padding.
Oh, it's amazing.
They're like the padded bra of cars.
But it's absurd, because it adds like 3 feet to the car.
Mm,
In a time when sort of pointless exterior dimensions were the thing, and the interiors weren't really any more roomy. I know that I remember that being weird with my Impala, just going, how is this car so massive on the outside but yet so average for my legs on the inside? This doesn't make any sense at all. I shouldn't like it, but damn you, I like it. Oh yeah, there's a bit of that going on.
I don't understand though how that sort of peak massiveness era of US cars, which I think probably sort of lasted into the middle 70s, didn't it, and then finally like the oil crisis and things hit home, and
yeah
the rise of Japanese imports, which were smaller, sort of persuaded people they could downsize a bit, and everything started to shrink. But up until that point, those really really big land yachts,
yeah,
you sort of go, okay, well, you know, it's like everything in America is just bigger. But I once had a really really massive pickup truck that, like my friend Aaron that I mentioned before, booked for me, because he's a car journalist, and he I said, is there any chance you can sort me out with a press car when I'm over in the US? And he went, yeah, I'll get you something. I said, could you get me something that's like really American, because I'll write about it, you know, something we don't get here. And he went, oh yeah, I can do that. And he got me this Dodge Ram Dually, this absolutely massive pickup truck,
the Dually.
Yeah, and worse than that, it was a diesel manual.
Oh wow, okay.
And it had so little weight over the back end that when it rained, and it was in Los Angeles, and you know, it sort of doesn't rain a lot there, so the roads get very very dry, and then when it does rain they become very greasy, and it would spin its back wheels in third because it had a lot of torque and no weight over the back end, and it was huge and you couldn't fit it in a lot of places. And I was thinking, I don't think they've totally reconfigured the city of Los Angeles since the 70s.
No, they haven't.
And the roads are okay, but parking, you know, car parks and you know, sort of entrance ramps to hotels and things like that all felt quite squeaky in a very wide, long pickup. And I know those American
Dually are extra girth at the rear because of the four tyres.
Yeah, it didn't have. Was it a Dually? It was a Dually, I think. It was certainly. It was a ridiculously big thing. It had the door mirrors were really interesting because they were massive and sort of portrait aspect, but then they were on a pivot, you could swing them out so they became landscape aspect, so you got extra vision for towing if you had a big trailer behind you.
Well, that, I mean,
it's
that,
like,
is,
they thought of this shit.
Well, that's the point of the Dually. If you have a Dually and you don't tow anything, it's just, I just can't get my head around it personally.
That was I told this story before on another podcast, but it's worth retelling, that I was over there working on the American version of Top Gear, the one that was presented by Tanner Rutledge and Adam. And Rutledge saw me getting into the Dually one day in the car park of the office and came over and went, what is this? And I went, it's my Dually. And my mate Aaron worked on the show. This is my Dually. And he went, why do you have this? And I went, oh, because Aaron booked it in for me. Aaron booked you this truck? And I went, yeah.
Yeah.
What a dick.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. Because it was such... And I think it was, I was about to try and manoeuvre it out of the car park, which in itself was a bit of an exercise, because it was hard to get around the, you know, curbs and shit. But yeah, I don't know, I was just fascinated. But has everything sort of, they've kind of moved curbs in, and when they've built new stuff in American cities since the 70s, have they kind of shrunk things down because they're like, oh, no one's got a Lincoln Continental anymore?
I've got a friend who's got one, yeah, with the opera back window, that little oval window, which is supposed to look romantic. I love it. I mean, it's awful, but I love it. I don't like myself for liking it. Do you know, I want to change the subject slightly, because I had a message through from somebody on Instagram about last week's podcast, I think, where was I talking about my son's sort of obsession with airships and zeppelins? Mm. Somebody's contacted me called Scott Brocklesby. He says, great work, guys. Keep it up. Regarding airships, Friedrichshafen in South Germany, where the Zeppelin started, still have two where you can go on. You can get a ride for about 300 quid for a flight over Lake Constance. Interestingly, the Zeppelin company still exists as part of the ZF group off of gearboxes.
Yeah.
Which only started to build gearboxes for Zeppelins in the first place. I did not know that ZF was gearboxes for Zeppelins. Did not know that.
The weird thing about ZF, you know, we were talking the other week, not the last podcast, probably the one before, about people who say VIN number.
Yes.
And you're doubling up there, mate.
It's a number.
The N stands for number. Yeah. Vehicle identification number.
Yes.
But ZF have made their own name into a doubling up. Because their name, I've just cheated and looked this up. The name ZF stands for Zahnradfabrik Friedrichshafen.
Right.
Which is, I guess, gear maker?
Gear maker in Friedrichshafen.
Friedrichshafen, but they now, officially the name of the company is ZF Friedrichshafen. So it's Zahnradfabrik Friedrichshafen Friedrichshafen. I apologise to any German speakers listening. Absolutely shit awful pronunciation. I only did 1 year of German at school, and all I can remember is my amphibious car is around the corner. So I'm not.
Do you know what? It's funny, isn't it? I only did 1 year of French. I was the opposite to you. Yeah, I did 1 year of French because we had my brother really liked German. He's older than me, so I remember him coming back from secondary school saying how good, how fun German was. Had a pretty engaging teacher, and and basically my brother said to me, my brother being my brother, just went, when you start secondary, do German, not French, because the French are shit at making cars and the Germans are much better engineers. And so if you get a job to do in the car industry, it's bound to be German. So learn German. And me being an impressionable whatever I was, 10-year-old, 11-year-old, I went, yeah, okay. So that's what I did. And actually, I love German. I got an A at German GCSE. Yeah.
I didn't know that you spoke German.
Well, I don't anymore, unfortunately, because it's been many years since I've regularly sprechened it. But
this is a little controversial, I think, sometimes, but I find spoken German quite a pleasant language to listen to.
It's fast.
I like the preciseness of it. Yeah, it's quick, but it's precise. It's got a sort of crispness to it that I enjoy.
I'm with you on that. I think French is definitely more romantic, and that's been said many times.
Maybybe a bit of Spanish, they get all the kind of, oh yeah, so flowing and romantic and stuff like that. We go, you know what? Sometimes I just like some spoken German.
Yeah.
Can't understand what's being said, but it sounds to me like it has an appealing sound all the same.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Do you know, we were talking about, it's funny what nostalgia does. Last podcast, talking about Kenwood and Technics bomber jackets.
Yeah.
From the 90s. And so what a listener has actually, it's really nice actually, a guy called Stephen, I think. He said, hi guys from Utah, USA. I've just found a Technics jacket on eBay USA and he's given me the link. I'm just having a look now. It's $75. But, shitting hell, this isn't 90s. Hang on. Wow, I think I'm going to forward it to you, Rich. This is very early 80s. It's got an it's got an embroidered waistband that's sort of rainbow fabric. So it's a black jacket with like an embroidered, no, not rainbow, like a horizon. So three different shades of sort of orange, yellow, red. Wow. I actually think that's so bad. I might put a cheeky bid on that. Yeah, it's so bad. I'll send it to you. You can look at that when you're on the toilet later. Yeah, so, I might...
Well, now, hang on a minute. Before we move off airships, after we talk to them, someone, I think in the YouTube comments, pointed out that there is an airship still, or there was an airship more recently, flying out of Cardington in Bedfordshire, and it was that Airlander 10. You remember that?
I do. When was that? How many years ago?
Well, here's the thing. This listener said it's actually crashed, but it had a sort of really, like, feeble, low-speed accident, which I think was in 2016. And this all came back to me because
you might not remember this. Driving it.
Yes. Well, no, I was driving up the M1, the A1 rather, to meet you at our spiritual home, Baldock Services, to film a Smith & Sniff video.
Yeah.
And I saw it in the sky, and I remember it was a beautiful day. I can't remember what car we were going to film, but it was a beautiful, clear blue sky, and I looked across from the A1, across the fields. I could see this, and it's got a sort of bum face, that Airlander airship, and I was like, oh, look, there's that bum-faced airship. And then later that day, I told you about it, went to look up a photo of it on my phone, and there was the news that it had crashed that very day. So, weirdly, on the way to meet you, I saw that airship just before it had a very low speed and pathetic crash. Anyway, that's...
If you're in any way... I've forgotten the name. What are the people who are, like, they don't walk under ladders and stuff?
Superstitious.
Yeah, if you're in any way superstitious, obviously it's the same as magpies. If you see one, terrible luck, bad things will happen to you. If you see one airship having a minor accident, awful luck. If you see two having catastrophic accident in the same day, you're absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine. You'll be just fine.
Okay, it's good to get these rules in place,
isn't it?
I'm just looking at that tennis jacket.
Probably thought that is incredible. Isn't that tennis jacket? isn't it really
Mother
good?
Joseph, that's remarkable.
I quite like it. Do you like the embroidery on it?
I like the way that it's not just a Technics jacket, but it has underneath the Technics name, it says the science of sound.
Do you think that buying a jacket like that and perhaps really aggressively driving an E36 BMW would just be one of the most fun you could have in the last 5 years?
Probably.
I'm talking open diff, closed supermarket car park on a slightly drizzly day. Massively overcooking it around the around those big lights, you know, those huge lights. I can imagine it. You'd be outside, like, egging me on. I'd have the jacket on. You'd have something else on. Oh, it could just work so well. We pretend it was pre-internet.
I've got some bad news. I've just looked at this eBay listing for the Technics jacket, and it says in red letters, so you know it's important, does not ship to United Kingdom. Bastards.
We've got friends in the States, Rich. Both
That's
of
true.
Us. Yeah. So if I said, listen, not being funny, but can I get a Technics jacket posted to you, please?
The description is actually quite good as well. It says, has some spotting on the front, but very nice for its age. Fits tight medium to large, as they were made back then as a bomber-style jacket. Colours are vibrant.
I'm going to buy it. Oh. I shouldn't be buying it. I've just been selling quite a lot of stuff because we're going to be moving out of our house in about 2 months' time. And I'm at that dangerous point in my life where I'm searching for a caravan to either borrow, rent, or buy. So it's kind of, I'm wondering, is there PCP on caravan, static caravans?
I bet there is.
And is there a listener out there who might be able to help me navigate this incredibly complicated world of static caravans? I'm looking for one that...
Is it complicated?
Yes.
Is it?
It is, yeah.
Why?
Well, the orientations of the bathroom and the cladding and the transportability of them. You know, they don't like being transported, static caravans. You can spend more in transport than you can on buying the bastard things.
They don't like being transported?
No, because they're not really that portable, which
right.
is why they're called static caravans, I suppose.
Yeah, hang on a minute. How are you going to...
Well, I've got to knock
put
a
it
fence
in your back
down.
Garden?
Yeah, I've got to take a whole fence down and then hopefully should get permission from the farmer to reverse it in through the field at the back, as long as the ground is dry. It
have
should
you,
be all right.
thought about, rather than one big static caravan, a small village of normal caravans.
It's a cheaper method, certainly.
So you have like your living room caravan and your bedroom caravan, and the kids have a bedroom caravan, and then you could, you know, if you're feeling lavish, you could have a like a dining room caravan or and a separate
I have actually spare room thought caravan. Yeah, I have. We're going to go probably, and again, if there's any listeners who could help me on this, I think I'm going to go static for everybody to live in, but I'm going to go either insulated shipping container next to it or insulated lorry back for pretty much like our day-to-day clothes and stuff that doesn't quite fit in the caravan that we can have quick access to.
Why don't you just buy an old lorry?
Well, you know those big horse lorries, the really big ones where racehorses are driven all over the place? I'm wondering whether one of those would be a good thing. Or even just go full-on old-school crusty and go mobile library with the chimney on the back.
Yes.
I could do that.
See, we've brainstormed it and we've come to the ideal conclusion. You just need an old mobile library and do, full levellers spec.
It would be levellers, wouldn't it? It would be. Yeah. Smoking lollies.
A lot more music with fiddles in it, but otherwise it'd be quite good.
Nice. I can't stand music with fiddles in it. It really pisses me off. It does. Every time I hear an old Rod Stewart track with a bloody mandolin in it, it really annoys me.
That's a bit unfair.
Well, it's annoying.
What about Ooh La La? That's a great song.
Do you like any levellers?
I secretly do, because it reminds me of being a student. It reminds me of the first year of university, so it's quite an exciting time of life. And so, I was going out with a girl who was really into the Levellers, so I was sort of forced to listen to it, and I kind of pretended I didn't like it at the time, but I haven't listened to a Levellers album in the last 5 years in a sort of fit of nostalgia. I don't mind it. I'll put it that way.
There was a uniform to people who liked the Levellers at school, from memory.
Start with the DMs.
Yes, finish with the German surplus army coat. Usually a band T-shirt, which was either Levellers, as mentioned, or sometimes the Wonder stuff, I think.
Yes. I think Nirvana. The main sort of the driving principle behind dressing in that sort of style, you know, following that kind of fitting with that kind of tribe, if you like, The guiding principle was, I must dress so it looks like I smell.
Yeah, because you don't expect people like that to be freshly showered.
Yeah.
Do you? So you expect when they walk past, you expect a little bit of a jet trail.
Yeah. For example, my then girlfriend who liked the Levellers, didn't fully embrace that style of dress, and her personal hygiene was pretty good, so you know it's that's an unfair assessment, but it was the look. You had to look like you smelt even if you didn't.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
It's just reminding me of something, you know, talking about home, like setting up home in a caravan, but something that was bothering me last week was why is it that people think the only style of furniture that's permissible in a conservatory is wicker?
Oh, yeah, you messaged me about that and it got me thinking. I don't know, because there is certain wicker furniture or retro wicker furniture which I quite like, and I like it enough to probably have brought it into the house, whereas I think most people would find that unacceptable, and I don't know why. Would they just go, what? Is it because it doesn't get damaged by UV as much? Although I feel like it does.
But the cushions are often got sort of floral prints on them, which are going to fade. So it doesn't...
Always.
It's not that. I don't know. It's just like... Because I was idly looking at some houses for sale. And, you know, you just go down a wormhole of just browsing houses and kind of going, God, some people have very interesting tastes in sort of, you know, like purple walls with orange bedsheets or something. And you go, crikey. But then I saw a couple of houses that had big, you know, sort of big sunrooms on the back. And they both were stuffed with wicker furniture. And just went, why? Why couldn't you just have a normal sofa in there?
What about, like, in the olden days when more people used to smoke? Imagine smoking on a hot day in a conservatory around wicker furniture. I mean, honestly, the place could go up like a straw field, couldn't it? It would just be ridiculous.
Is it because the wicker...
I don't know.
People worried that there's like the conservatory might be sort of a bit more damp than the rest of the house, and the wicker won't absorb the damp in the way that the wooden frame of a sofa might.
I just don't
Or is it
know.
Just a style choice? I just don't get it. And you kind of go, because you wouldn't have a wicker sofa or armchairs in your normal living room. It would be weird unless you lived in Florida or something, and even then it's a bit weird. But somehow you go, oh, we've had a conservatory extension. Get down to World of Wicker quick. It's just
World
odd.
Of Wicker. Actually, World you know, a good friend of mine, one of my oldest friends, Luke Stout. He runs a big business that was built on wicker furniture. I've just what on earth haven't I asked him? Hey, I should ask him if anybody. He hasn't paid me to say this, but there's a really really nice company called the Old Creamery. Down in Yeovil in Somerset, look them up. They sell good quality furniture, but they also sell non-wicker furniture these days. Because I think wicker was big in the sort of early mid '80s when they started.
Yeah, yeah. Oh god, yeah. Yeah, maybe
Luke's
wicker
a good lad. Used to drive a Citroen ZX Volcane.
Wicker might have crept into the rest of the house.
Oh, wicker the house. I
don't know. I think wicker in the '80s, wicker crept into the rest of the house, didn't it? Or maybe just
it might have crept in.
It's so noisy. It's the noise when you sit on a bit of wicker furniture, that creaky noise, sort of brittle creaking sound that I don't find very pleasant.
Well, what's that? There's a wicker, that Fiat that had wicker seats in it, that was a derivative of the Fiat 600 or the 500. Is it bloody hell? Do you know the one I mean?
No.
It had a wicker interior, like as standard. And I think that it was like that on the basis that you drove to the beach and you could get in it like when you'd just gone for a lovely bathe in the sea or you'd gone for a swim in Lake Como or something. I'm wondering, is that the origins of wicker interior in a conservatory where you jump in a swimming pool, you get back out and you just lie on the wicker? Why the living shit are we talking about this?
I don't know. I feel like we've said the word wicker so many times it's become meaningless. We should move on to something
else.
It's
called a Fiat Jolly. I think it's called a Fiat...
Those beach cars with no sides.
With no doors. Yeah, they cut down. They were based on the 500. The Fiat Jolly has wicker seats as standard.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. Yes. Oh, I thought you meant like a proper car. Those are sort of weird. Yes. Like
it is
like
a proper
sort
car.
Of beach resort. Yeah. But you know, I mean, they're not because you wouldn't have one if you lived in Runcorn. But if you lived on the Italian lakes or in Cap Ferrat, you might justifiably have one because it's nice.
Witness, it would be great. Yeah. Talking of furniture, so I've just spent been in this house nearly 8 years, so I'll be knocking it down, obviously, hopefully, soon. And I've been storing in the garage for all of this 8 years since we moved out from our last place. You might remember I bought a Funfair Waltzer and converted it to a sofa.
At
great expense and time, I hasten to add. I've been storing it in the garage because we couldn't fit it in this house. It's too big. It's massive, and it does weigh about 200 odd kilos. I thought the agreement that when we build the new place, it'll go in pride of place, finally back in a house. It's all been beautifully upholstered. I had it all done, original paint. My wife told me last week, when I said, well, of course, I'm not going to sell the Waltzer because I've been keeping it all this time so we can put it in the new house. She went, I don't know where you got that from. It's not coming in the new house. I went, it's taken a third of my garage up for the last 8 years. If this wasn't being saved to go in the new house, why didn't we sell it 7 years ago? I'm really pissed off. There's so many cars that couldn't fit in the garage because the Waltzer's been at the end, and it's like, what? So there's been a huge amount of miscommunication here, and I don't want to sell it because it's really good, because it took me a long time to find one and convert it, and
yeah.
I don't really know what to do now, Rich. I'm in a sort of quandary. It's a really fantastic original 50s Maxwell Waltzer on Bifferskip wheels.
Bifferskip.
It is, you know, the really big industrial ones that you can lock off or... Yeah, I've got it on Bifferskip casters.
Okay, coming up after this, we'll have some more from Bifferskip wheels. Are you familiar with the old expression, happy wife, happy life?
Yes.
Sell the waltzer.
Okay. I'm not going to let it go cheap, but if anyone wants to buy an original 50s Maxwell waltzer converted to a wonderful piece of display furniture, they can get in touch with the show.
Yeah.
FFS.
look, guys.
Listen.
Look. I was going to mention this at the top of the show, and we somehow got distracted talking about airships and wicker, as usual. But
no, it was Bruce Springsteen's jackets.
And Bruce Springsteen, yeah, the bloody boss again. I've bought a car.
Have you?
I bought a car. I told you this. I sent you a message and said I bought a car.
Oh yeah. So
hang on. I didn't tell you what, because I wanted to tell you when we were recording, because I think you're going to be a bit, I don't know, cross. I'm not sure.
Is it cheap? Is it a dog car? What is it?
No. I know I said dog car, but I didn't. The point I probably didn't make clear when we started talking about this how many weeks ago and people started emailing in suggestions. The point I didn't make clear is I said sort of dog car because I fancied something a bit ratty that I didn't care about the dog messing up. And quite honestly, the dog doesn't mess up the car. I just put some towels down and stuff. She's fine. But really, I needed a new family car because our Jaguar I-Pace comes to the end of its lease next month and is going back. And I wanted something a bit practical so the dog and the kids could go in and luggage if necessary. And people have been emailing in all sorts of interesting suggestions, mostly Mondeo ST220 Estate, but some other stuff as well.
It's a bit Brexity for me, but yeah.
Yeah, quite a lot of love for old Saabs, Subarus, a good showing from Subarus.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of love for Volvos, XC60s, XC90s, that kind of stuff. All sorts of things have been chucked
Mobile libraries.
Mobile libraries, Nissan Elgrands, you know, you name it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
Vaguely practical petrol-powered spectrum of cars, because the other caveat was, like, unless it's a post-2016 diesel, I'm going to get clobbered for the ULEZ extension, which comes in October this year. So preferably compliant with that, so I'm not paying £12.50 a day just to use the car when I want to.
You're stringing this out, Porter.
And we ran through all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
But you remember this all started because I said, I've got this vague idea, I need to get another family car, and I'd started browsing supercharged Range Rovers, and you were disdainful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've just put a deposit down on a supercharged Range Rover.
Have you really?
Yeah.
You've bought a supercharged petrol Range Rover in 2021 and you live in London?
Yes.
You've just got rid of an electric car and you've bought a supercharged petrol Range Rover?
Yes.
You absolutely...
Well, I haven't got rid. It's
salami still... oboe.
No. I very much enjoyed our 2 years with the... with the I-Pace, and let the record show, I had a Nissan Leaf before that. I like electric cars, but I just realised I wanted one last sort of hurrah with a silly internal combustion engine, because inevitably our next family car will be electric, or very least hybrid, hopefully plug-in, so that we can run around locally on electrical power. But I just thought, fuck it, I'll go for something a bit giddy that probably won't work properly.
I'm so glad that you've done it and not me.
Look at it that way. I'm doing it so you don't have to.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't do that many miles in our family car generally. So, you know, that's a suasion. There's a little...
Hang on a minute. You've already got a Land Rover. I've just remembered.
No, I'm tucking that away for a bit.
Are you?
Yeah, because it's... At the moment, you should see the state of my Defender. It's embarrassing because it's parked on the street. I haven't been using it very much. It's been parked under a tree. The battery went flat, so then it was stuck in the spot under the tree. And it's always that thing, you know, you go, oh, fuck, get the car started, get the car. And I just haven't got around to getting it going again. Hmm. But, of course, under a tree is not good. It's got muck on it and moss
algae
in the window runners, which, you know, normally I say a Defender isn't a Defender until it's got moss in The Window Runner. But the other week, was it 2 weeks ago, a Defender 90 Heritage like mine, albeit with fewer miles on it, went through collecting cars, the online auction thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it went for absolutely idiotic money. It was ridiculous. Because you see Defender Heritages at dealers with big price tags attached to them. And you go, well, all right, bully for you. You're having a go. You're hoping that someone's not paying attention and has got more money than sense. And they'll make you an offer on that. But you think that's not what people are actually paying. When somebody puts their hand in the air virtually on an auction site and actually appear to be prepared to pay quite a chunky amount of money for one of those cars, which, by the way, I think is frigging idiotic. I mean, I love my Defender, but it is, when all said and done, a silly old-fashioned truck, and I don't think they're worth what people seem to be paying for them. And it's an interesting situation to be in, but I sort of thought, I can't just leave this on the street anymore, because now it's become super nickable, hasn't it? And they are nickable anyway.
Yeah, they are. So it does deserve a little bit more worship.
Yeah, so I'm going to clean it up, and then I've found somewhere to put it under a roof and keep it in good nick. But it's not in my immediate neighbourhood. And so it sort of means the Defender is kind of relegated to high days and holidays sort of stuff. And so I'm going to stash it away for a bit, because we might move out of London at some point anyway, and then it'll be fine. But
you're not, because I can fully understand why you're not going to sell it, because I know you're very attached to it and you never bought it as an investment car. You bought it because you always wanted a Defender and this was your last chance. So...
Mm.
I totally get that. I'd be shocked if you said you're going to sell it. I mean, I'd understand if you were going to earn triple the money for it, but so
it's a ridiculous. I know this is like first world problem par excellence, but it's like the values of them seem to be becoming very, very stupid, and it's an odd situation to be in. And I hate it when people kind of have these kind of high value investment cars and then don't use them.
Mm.
I've always said, oh, I would never do that, you know. And I have for 5 years. I've used the Defender as a car, you know, and it's not got mega miles on it, but it's got almost 10,000 miles on it, and it's you know, so I do, and I have done long journeys in it and lived to tell the tale, and had the kids and the dog in it and stuff. It has been our car. I haven't babied it, but there comes a point where you just go, I probably shouldn't just leave it on the street under a tree.
Mm.
Because apart from anything else, it might get robbed. So I think I've found somewhere that's to keep that, so that at least it doesn't feel sort of wantonly stupid to let it get kind of,
well, listen, I think the biggest question on everybody's lips here is, does the supercharged Range Rover have a tow bar?
It does not.
Well, you need to frigging well get one. So right. I can, well, because I'm only going to be interested in borrowing it if it's got a bar. And seeing as I've got a static caravan possibly emerging in the next. Jesus. Do you know what I'm going to do?
I'm going to fit a tow bar. I'm going to wait till you've all gone to bed, and then I'm going to move your static caravan.
Yeah, we'll do it at 3 a.m. and we will up the M1 or A1. Cruise control.
I was just thinking I'd just move it a little bit so you get really freaked out and you come out in the morning and go, I'm sure that the caravan was about 10 feet over there before. Or even just a foot. I'll just move it a foot a night until eventually you start to think, like, basically like the plot of The Twits.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, it's got all that power. It's built for tugging. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
so well, bloody hell, you've bought it with real money. You've bought a supercharged petrol.
Well, see, the thing is, because I think when I sort of misled people, a few people were messaging, going, "Oh, your dog car," and it was like, I think it's because I said I wanted something that was a bit of a snotter, and I was thinking to keep the budget as low as possible, but within the bounds of something that's sort of habitable and that I'd be okay to put my children in. And I did find an older supercharged Range Rover for not much cheapness. It was more than I intended to spend, but it seemed like a particularly good one. And the dealer was up north, and when I spoke to him, he was a bit weird about selling the car to me because I wasn't local. It was quite a strange conversation. Yeah, he was sort of like, basically, because it said on the website that they deliver. So I went, do you deliver then? Oh, yeah, we deliver, yeah. And I went, oh, I'm actually down south. I think that's partly, because I'm from the north, I understand northerners, because I am one. And I think sometimes when you mention that you live in the south, there's a certain type of northerner, they immediately take a guinea and they think that you're a twat. And so I think he was already like, this fancy bastard ringing me up, asking about this car, wanting it to be delivered. And he was basically, he just couldn't be arsed.
But you know what? They're not, I can't imagine, no offence to you, because you've just bought one, but I can't imagine a supercharged petrol Range Rover flying out the door as a second-hand vehicle at the moment, when people are mostly...
You wouldn't think so, would you?
No.
I don't know. The car dealer who was just weirdly reluctant to sell me this older one told me that they hadn't been as busy as they are now for ages. He went, "Is that we're really actually run off our feet because we've got skeleton staff and we've got loads of cars going out." And then the place where I found the car that I've put the deposit on said the same thing. He went, "Oh, we're totally pulled out. We're going to need a bit of time to get the car ready because we're trying to process so many cars on a small staff." So I think people have got maybe money they would have spent on, I don't know, holiday and just, yeah, I don't know, travelling to work and food at work and things, that actually maybe a few people have got a few more quid in their back pocket. If you've still got a job and you're still earning what you earned pre-COVID, maybe you've actually got a bit more disposable income. But now the real boredom's set in and people are just trying to cheer themselves up by buying expensive things.
I'm buying really,
because I'll be honest, that's kind of what I was doing. I was
going,
like,
to say, you've done that.
I'm fucking bored of COVID. I'm so bored of having to be in and not being able to see friends and not go and do stuff and all of that we once took for granted and now we can't do. And I just thought, it was one of my arguments to my wife about it. I was like, look, just for a bit of fun, because, you know, fuck it, why not? Let's get a slightly flashy, needless car and just enjoy it for a bit and then we can always move on.
But this is when, I mean, I know your missus lived in the UK for years and years now, but is this when you go, it's actually not that big, it's classed as a medium-sized car in the States?
Yeah.
A full-size Range Rover.
Have you ever seen because this is a L322, if you're a Range Rover nerd.
Jingle.
So a third generation Range Rover. If you ever see those in the US in traffic amongst a Lincoln Navigator or a Ford Expedition or anything like that, or an Escalade.
They're medium.
They look tiny. They look like a Fiat Uno in context. It's just, it's bizarre how small they look in the US, but obviously they're not small.
Well, I'm thinking this, Rich, when it either all falls apart or you can't afford to feed it anymore, we will rip the engine and box out of it and we can EV it for London-centric luxury. I know, lovely, sweet. And we'll put the engine in something that I will find and do it, something hopefully more appropriate. How about that? Like a Hyundai Sonata, for example.
So you're saying when I can't afford to put petrol in it anymore, I should spend tens of thousands of pounds completely rebuilding
Yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll
hang on,
see.
So you've still got the 911, you're still going to keep the Defender.
Yeah, so there's a bit of a reconfiguration going on. The Defender will be sort of put away for best.
Hibernation a bit.
Hibernation. Yes, we still have a 911. And yeah, we'll get this Range. I mean, I haven't seen this bloody car. I bought it on the basis of some photographs because of, you know, the world we live in at the moment. And I put a deposit down for the guy to hold it until I can figure out how to actually get it.
Bloody hell.
On the basis that if I turn up and it is not actually as nice as it looks or sounds on paper, that I could still bail. But it's a later one. This is why it spiralled out of control. The budget kind of crept up and I saw this one for sale and it was like, it's a late model with the 5-litre V8 in it. So the more modern engine.
Yeah. And, perfect for
various
Mark
other
10
accoutrements.
Jag. Resto mod.
Mark 10 Jag, yeah.
That's what I would put that engine in.
I think you'd be better off with the earlier, like the 4-litre or the 4.2 supercharged V8 from an XJR, because I think that 5-litre is a sort of next-generation engine. I bet it's much more electrical engine, in as much as it's probably got more advanced ECUs that are talking to other things, that it will have a bit of a duck fit if you try and put it in a Jaguar Mark 10. It'll freak out because you can't see the body controller that looks after, you know, the central locking or something. And but an older one would be much more of a self-contained unit. I don't know. I could be wrong. There are people we know who probably know this and who are listening.
The listeners are just, they're either rubbing their hands in glee or they can't wait to hear the trials and tribulations of buying a Range Rover blind. Isn't that called prick and collect?
It is, yeah.
I think it is, isn't it? Where you order something quite complicated and expensive without looking at it.
Yeah. I think in this case it might be called click and regret, but I'll
click and regret.
I kind of want to go and get it rather than have it delivered, because I want to be able to go to where it's for sale and sort of go have a look at it and then, you know.
If this is classed as work, why don't I put a mask on and white gloves? I'll come and pick you up in the JDM taxi. And I will take you, I'll put a visor on, and I'll take you to collect your Range Rover.
I haven't told you where it is.
No, you haven't. Is it in Orkney? Where is it?
Aberdeen. No, it's in Lancashire, so it's a bit of a distance away.
Well, listen, if you want a lift, I've got a cab, and it's really comfortable. I won't even charge you the fuel.
Well, the LPG.
I won't even charge you.
Well, anyway,
the LPG.
I've got to figure this one out because I'm waiting to see what if there's revised COVID rules and all that malarkey. But
are you going to have a family crest painted on the door in small gold leaf? Please
one of those
do.
Silver statues of a horse put midway up the bonnet.
But make sure it's got a really prominent penis dangling out from underneath it. So get it cast especially.
Of course.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't think I can go and get it for a couple of weeks at least, for various reasons, which is fine. The guy's going to hold it for me, but because he's got some of my money, so he has to. But
battery will be flat by the time you go and get it, so it'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah. So this is a sort of a developing story, but I have put a deposit down, so technically I have sort of bought it. I'm in the process of buying it.
Get a bar on it.
What bar?
Toe bar.
Oh no. I hate toe bars.
Car with a bar. It's got to be done. A car like that tows 3.5 has to always be ready to tow 3.5. In other words, listen, it'll be a removable bar, a covert bar, but you've got to put a bar on it. I've got a bar on the chimney, and it basically all it can pull is, like, I don't know, one sheep. That's about it. Whereas you could possibly pull about 40 sheep. Come on. Get a bar on it.
I am not putting a tow bar on it.
Put a fucking bar on it.
I'm not.
Put a bar on it.
The more you say it, the less likely it is. I'm not.
Oh, are you one of those, are you? You're one of those. You're not going to bow to the pressure. You'll go the opposite way.
No, why would I want a fucking tow bar on a beautiful late model?
It's because Range Rover? Because it's the ability. It's the choice and the ability to do it and to carry out
to
the
tow
task.
What? I don't have anything to tow.
But you've got mates that might want to tow stuff. Hi.
No,
hi,
I
Rich.
Don't.
I'm
no,
here.
I don't. No, I refuse to be friends with anyone who tows stuff. So it's a bit of a rule of mine. Anyway.
But putting a bar on our Chrysler 300 was the best thing I ever did. Brilliant.
Oh, man.
A removable dog stick was brilliant. They do, though. They do. They call it a swan neck, but you go, that's not a swan neck. It's a stunt cock made
swan
of metal.
Cock.
Yeah, it's...
yes. What? Well, look, we should wrap
this
up.
I was supposed to talk about the McLaren Artura, and we're talking about...
fucking hell. And there's a new Nissan Qashqai came out last week as well. There's actually some new cars, but we've run out of time.
Okay.
We'll talk about them next week. We'll do a kind of car news roundup and try and sound like a proper car podcast. But in the meantime, let's bring this into land. I have three things to tell you. One, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show, upon which there are many excellent videos with him doing various different things with cars, including digging them out of garages and stuff like that.
We've got a world exclusive this week.
Which is what?
Driving the brand new old Ford Escort.
Oh, yes.
Made in Wales.
That's lovely.
Yeah, so watch it.
Second thing I have to tell you is that I'm hawking various books, Spin the Wheel of Tat. This week, why not go and buy Steel Flies by Roy Lanchester, a spoof Cold War novel by a fictional alcoholic car journalist. And three, there are no snakes in New Zealand, and it is illegal to own a snake, even if you are a zoo.
What?
Yeah. There are no snakes in New Zealand. They have a lot of ground-based birds, including, of course, the kiwi. And so they don't want snakes because for a snake, that would just be a buffet. So to preserve their indigenous wildlife, it is completely illegal to own a snake. You're not even allowed snakes in zoos or laboratories because they don't want the risk of them escaping. And if you see a snake, because they do get sea snakes that come in, if you see a snake, it is the law that you have to report it. They're very anti-snakes in New Zealand. That's the headline.
I quite like snakes, but I don't want one as a pet. But I do prefer spiders. That's all I'm going to add to that.
I think they have spiders.
Yeah, they have loads of them.
Okay, good. Well, there we are. That's it from Britain's leading podcast about Wicca and snakes. So thank you ever so much for listening. We will do this all again next week. Until then, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Wicca and snakes.